Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everyone's having a fantastic day today. And how are you doing today, Dan?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely wonderful. I'm trying not to breathe into the microphone today so I don't sound like Darth Vader. Good. I'm trying to adjust this thing. I've moved it again, so let me know how it works. I want to give you some information on Kavanaugh. This is Supreme Court, the nightmare from the pit pick that Trump picked. I want to talk about his wife real quick, and this is going to be very interesting, you guys. From 2001 to 2005, Kavanaugh's wife worked in the White House as George W. Bush's personal secretary. Just thought I'd mention that. And she was also Bush's personal assistant from 1996 to 1999 while he was still the governor of Texas. She was the personal assistant for the Bush-Cheney presidential campaign from 96 to 2000. The Kavanaughs are close friends with the Bush family, and they even attended their wedding. Remember, George H. was the first American politician to use the phrase New World Order, and the Kavanaughs are friends with the family, close friends. With that, we know about the Bush crime family. Are you surprised? Now, all we remember with the Bush, Prescott Bush basically was a Nazi. Back in 1933, he tried to take over the country with a hostile coup using Smedley Butler. He was found guilty of violating the Trading with the Enemies Act during World War II. George Bush Jr. and 9/11 and the presidential order that led to the concealment of physical evidence after the investigation was concluded. George H. Bush was the director of the CIA, and according to most research, was involved in the assassination of JFK. And, of course, Neil Bush was involved in the Dirty Bank scandal in Colorado. And this Bush crime family syndicate is directly tied into the Clinton crime family syndicate. Basically, this is the Nazi element of the government, I guess you'd call it. And so it's a mess. And so now we have this guy's wife completely and totally compromised with who she belongs to and who she's worked with. And this, now we're starting to realize that Kavanaugh is going to be a compromised, useful, idiot, do-boy. And it's sad. Now, he's got all kinds of debts on his credit cards. Some say $60,000, some say $200,000. And it's just all over the place. And when you ask him and when you ask him where this, all these debts came from, he said he's buying sports tickets. Now, I mean, if the guy has credit cards and he's running sports tickets, how do we know he doesn't have a gambling problem? How do we know these are sports tickets? I mean, so now we have a Supreme Court justice whose wife is fully, completely and totally compromised with George Bush and the boys. To me, it sounds like another Kennedy fiasco is what it sounds like to me. I believe that Trump was forced into nominating this guy. You can see by his body posture when he did it how much he didn't want to do it. Because remember, they have to make sure they maintain parity in this United States Supreme Court because it is the balancing agency for the entire government as far as I'm concerned and a lot of other people are concerned, because not only do they legislate from the bench, which they're not supposed to do, but they always they interpret the laws like they do, and it's just the whole thing is a giant mess. And sadly, you know, we're starting to see this more and more and more, Austin, because quite frankly, you know, we have to look at what Trump's doing. I like a lot of the stuff that Trump has done. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But if you think that Donald Trump isn't being told what to do by higher ups, I mean, he just put in a man who has some weird things happening on his credit cards, whose wife was the personal executive assistant to the president, George W. Bush, with 9/11. He basically allowed Ken Starr to, in his investigation against President Clinton, gave Clinton an escape clause basically to get out of being impeached, and he completely covered up the murder of George Foster by ruling it a suicide. I mean, this guy's totally, totally compromised. And always remember, whenever you get into a situation in which the communists or another entity is trying to take over the world or take over a country, the first thing they try to do is seize control of information. In a sophisticated country like the United States, that means controlling the media. Now, some of this information is from Dave Hodges. He said it to me. And there is an alternative media. It needs to be extinguished. In other words, they don't like what I'm doing right now. I just spoke to a former FBI, or former state attorney, basically. She worked a lot with the FBI. And I told her, I said, God's called me to do this. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it because it's simply too dangerous. I don't really, you know, want to do a lot of the stuff that I do, but I feel that this is my calling with the good Lord, and that's why I'm doing it. So we have to understand that this is what these people understand. These people who are trying to take us over are the same communists that took over Russia. The deep state, the purveyors of the present coup against our country, its laws, its families, and religion, lost the presidential election because they largely ignored the threat of the independent media and allowed the independent media to use their platforms, YouTube, which is basically it's now been turned off, and we defeated Hillary Clinton. The establishment learned their lesson in history by failing to extinguish the alternative news talk show hosts like Dave Hodges and myself and the Hagmans and Sheila Zelinsky. The globalists are making up for lost time and are extinguishing the alternative media as quickly as they can prior to the 2018 midterm elections and also for the 2020 elections. The second step in the elimination of a country's government is to destroy the culture and the religion, and it also consists of disarming the people who would eventually stand up to the tyranny. The elimination of the First Amendment, like they have no First Amendment in Germany, makes it difficult to stand up to the takeover because if you say something that they don't like, they simply put you in jail. Like the lady that I talked about a few months ago, who's 90 years old, who asked the government to prove to her that there were 6 million people who got killed in the concentration camps in Germany during World War II because she thought the number was high. And because she asked that question, they put her in prison for 3 years in Germany. You can't ask that question. You can't talk like that. You can't do that. You have to do what you're told because they don't have a First Amendment. The elimination of the First Amendment makes it difficult to stand up again, but people will still organize on a local and regional level and resist the invasion of the globalists. The problem is then they're going to take the guns away from us, which is what they want to do. I mean, I'm not going to forget what Donald Trump did after the shooting with Sheriff Israel down in South Florida, in which his men were ordered to stand down. And Austin reported that a video of multiple men leaving from the back of the building, throwing gear into a pickup truck. And the one lady who had been shot saying that she saw a guy in full military SWAT uniform basically running around and shot her with a peculiar type of rifle. We're not going to forget any of that stuff. And suddenly Trump's talking about, you know, taking away guns before people have due process and starts pushing the states. And all of a sudden our idiot senators and congressmen in Tallahassee decide to push through legislation in a knee-jerk reaction within a few weeks. And Governor Rick Scott signs it in legislation, pushing us into another type of confiscation scenario like they have in New York City and also in California. I'm not going to forget any of that stuff. And see, the problem is we have all of this mass media now that is continuing to give us more bread and circuses. Look at this disaster now with this Peter Strzok, whatever his name, Strzok, sounds like a Russian name. So the name is pronounced Strzok. I'm reading you right from Wikipedia. Is a United States Federal Bureau of Investigation agent, FBI agent. Strzok was the chief of the counter-espionage section that led the FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of personal email. Strzok rose to become a deputy assistant director of the counterintelligence division, the second highest position in that division. He also led the FBI's investigation into the Russian interference, there we go, into the 2016 United States elections. In June and July 2017, Strzok worked on the Robert Mueller special counsel investigation and the links or coordination between Donald Trump's presidential campaign and the Russian government. Mueller removed Strzok from the Russian investigation when he became aware that criticisms of Trump contained personal text messages exchanged between Strzok and a colleague. He was basically telling everybody, well, this is what he said. He said, you know, I'm going to use the word, but he said, F Trump, want him impeached, that kind of stuff. Sent out thousands of these things. The Department of Justice, led by Republican Jeff Sessions, has defended Mueller's response to the text messages after the release of the DOJ report, which revealed further anti-Trump text from Strzok. He agreed to testify before the House Judiciary Committee, which was really, really stupid on his part. He has been eviscerated in front of this. I mean, all hell has basically broken out in this judiciary meeting. In fact, Gohmert asked Strzok, who's having an affair on his wife, because he wouldn't testify, and Strzok had a smug look on his face. And Gohmert asked Strzok about looking into his wife's eyes while he was lying about Lisa Page in his extramarital affair. I mean, this was going that dirty right now. The Democrats erupted in the exchange, calling it outrageous, intolerable, and harassing the witnesses. Again, welcome to the Bread and Circuses show. I think Gerald Celente called it the American President Reality Show. You know, Austin, yep. You can't make this stuff up, bud. And then the craziest thing about all of this stuff is here we all sit. I mean, I'm actually, no offense, I don't mean this badly. I'm appalled by what's going on, but I also think it's funny. I mean, this guy was stupid enough to agree to testify like this and be grilled by all these congressmen. I just told him, no, thank you. I'm just doing the fifth. I don't want to talk. I'm going to shut up. And again, it's like see, the guy's arrogant. Here's the deal. He's so arrogant. He's slamming a sitting president, saying he's basically impeached on tweets. He's basically having an affair on his wife, and he's laughing and smirking on the stand while they're asking him these questions. He has no credibility whatsoever. It's the pure pathological, sociopathic, lying personality this guy has that made him want to, the megalomaniac that he is, that made him want to go into national news like this and be completely and totally eviscerated before all of these questions. I mean, again, he's a megalomaniac. He's thought he could just do whatever he wanted to do, say whatever he wanted to say, do whatever he wanted to do it, whoever he wanted to do it to, and now he's finding out that he can't do that. So it's kind of ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous. What do you think, Austin, and what's your first story?
It really has. It's become a giant nonsense. I mean, pretty much that's what it's turned into right now. It's just a nonsense show. All it is it continue to keep people focused on a lot of other things. I'm not discrediting the fact that a lot of these guys do not even need to be anywhere near a government office as far as what they're holding right now. And this is pretty much prime example of what we heard of cleaning the swamp. The problem that I have is gutting the swamp, draining the swamp, cleaning the swamp. That was a great idea. I love the idea. It needs to be done. The problem is we're not doing it. We're still putting people in like the Supreme Court guy. We're still going in and putting people like Gottlieb in, who basically used to work for Merck, you know, as head of the FDA. These are things that should not be happening at all. They need to be going the opposite direction. They need to be going out. Like, there's things that need to be talked about, like I talked about with the MMR vaccine that came out the other day that killed those two girls back to back. And the reason why I brought this up again is now there's been another report that a baby died from meningitis up in Virginia 2 days after it was vaccinated. And what they've done is they've been able to spin this in the mainstream media, is now they've come out with articles now of basically saying that the reason why this baby died was because they did not vaccinate him soon enough. I kid you not. Here's one of the titles from Women's Health. A four-month-old just died from meningitis after more than likely exposure to an unvaccinated person. The individual, the parents basically, had the child receive their four-month vaccinations 2 days prior to his death. He was a completely healthy four-month-old child taken to the doctor for a well baby visit. Then the baby received the meningitis, pertussis, tetanus vaccine, and four other ones. 2 days after receiving the vaccine, the baby dies of meningitis. Meningitis is listed on the vaccine insert as an adverse event reported after a vaccination. So this is, they put it on the bottle, that meningitis, the actual contraction of the disease meningitis, is a possible adverse reaction when you're getting this vaccination. Okay, so that's right there on the table. We already know that. It's already on the adverse reaction slip. Well, they go in now, and the doctors come in, and they basically said, well, the reason why the baby got it is because you allowed the baby to be exposed to somebody that wasn't vaccinated. It was an unvaccinated person that had meningitis. They gave it to your baby. That's why they died. And the parents are freaking out now. They basically, after they took the baby in after a day of horrible heat, temperature, fever, they were informed the baby had contracted meningitis and inflammation of the protective membrane that covers the brain and spinal cord, and basically died a day later. Now they're doing all this damage control online right now with all these headline titles basically saying, oh, here's another one that I just pulled up. Headline title, this family is urging parents to vaccinate their kids after their four-month-old son dies of meningitis. Well, I'm pretty sure in this title right here, it doesn't say anything about the child getting the meningitis shot 2 days before they actually died. This right here is pure propaganda at its finest. They're taking this horrible tragedy of this young little innocent baby dying, and they're spinning it into a PR spin to make everybody think the reason why this baby died is because he was not properly vaccinated. Nowhere are they going in detail except this one article that I found on the very detailed discussion of this baby getting seven vaccinations, including the meningitis, pertussis, and tetanus, spread in one shot, and the baby dying 2 days later of this, Dad. This is horrible when this happens. It's egregious to me. There's no excuse to it whatsoever. And the problem with it is, you know, would he have died if he would have just gotten a meningitis vaccine just by itself? I don't know. That's a question we'll never know now. We'll never be able to find out. When you start injecting all these different vaccinations into these babies at one time, it massively overloads their system. They don't have a developed immune system at 4 months old. It doesn't even exist. So when you go in all of a sudden and you just start dumping in half a dozen different vaccines, and not just the compound as far as the virus itself, you're actually dumping in all these adjuvants that are incredibly strong inflammatory compounds, and you're wondering why these kids are having significant adverse reactions. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to put two and two together, but it just irritated me that when I saw this horrible tragedy, and then I started doing some research, I saw all these news articles online twisting the whole story of what happened and basically going in now and using it as a spin to try to demand that parents get their children vaccinated earlier because this child got a meningitis vaccination and died 2 days later. And the only thing they can possibly come to, the only conclusion they can reach, is that the baby happened to be exposed to meningitis within a day after coming home from the vaccination. Unbelievable, man.
Well, again, it's the spin factory. They've got to spin it because the manufacturers don't have any problems making stuff that kills children because they can't be sued. This is like we need to play a record about this one. This because it's the same thing over and over and over again. And it's sad because the children, like you said, the immune system doesn't start developing the antibodies that it needs until after the first year. So all the vaccines you get in the first year are complete and total waste of time. They don't work. And it's just you got to keep the kid away from people who have diseases. You got to keep people. You have to watch the kid, make sure they don't. And to say this, you guys who take your kids and put them in church nurseries, we never did that. Every time I put a kid in a church nursery, the kid got sick. And so I was waiting until they were 2 or 3 years old before I started putting them in the nursery because it's so unclean in a lot of those nurseries. And it's just you got to just avoid a lot of stuff. You got to avoid a lot of kids that have sicknesses and diseases when you have your children sick. Your children are basically healthy. By the way, Congress has introduced new Unmasking Antifa Act 2018 law that proposes up to a 15-year in prison for mask crimes. These are the people that George Soros are hiring, and he puts masks on them so they can't be identified. Leftists are upset over Congress' newly proposed law, the Unmasking Antifa Act of 2018, that makes it a federal crime for wearing a mask or a disguise while injuring, oppressing, threatening or intimidating any person in the U.S. that blocks them from any of their constitutional rights, which is punishable by up to 15 years in prison and or a fine. The law is in response to Antifa committing violence, preventing conservatives from speaking in public and destroying property. Most of Antifa's activities and wearing a mask during the commission of a crime are already illegal, but the police are not enforcing the existing laws, often due to a stand-down order by the police chiefs. The new law states no law enforcement officer be considered to be in violation of his section for lawfully carrying out the duties of his office if they arrest somebody wearing a mask. Opponents worry that it could lead to a crackdown on political activity and that a 15-year jail sentence is extreme. Guys, I reported yesterday, I was the only person that reported this that I heard, that all of those people that were arrested during the campaign with Donald Trump, that none of them were prosecuted. They dropped the case on almost all of them. They got convictions on none of them. I mean, this is nightmarish. I mean, this is going on, that we have people walking, Brian, on black hoodies, black masks, ski masks, and that basically are carrying their Antifa flags, that are paid mercenaries, and that we can't arrest them. Quite frankly, I think that anybody committing a crime like this, wearing a mask so they cannot be identified, needs to be arrested also. In fact, I know Grady Judd, our sheriff here in Central Florida, said, you show up in a mask at one of these events, you're going to jail. And yeah. I agree with him. What do you think, buddy?
Well, I talked about this story. Yes, we talked about it a few minutes yesterday, and I told you guys I was going to do some more research on it. And I'm with Dad on this. The more I did some research last night, the more this bill troubled me. Because as Dad just said, there are literally a plethora of laws already on the books for being in the commission of a crime, wearing a mask in public, basically terrorizing individuals. That's already a charge too. If you like run around with a Halloween mask in the middle of the day, that's not like a certified area for like Halloween or something like that, and you're committing an act of terrorism. There's just a plethora of laws on the books already for this. This is really creepy to me when I started doing some more research in the language of this bill, because this bill essentially, to me, what this looks like, because you got to remember, right now, it's good and great. You know, Trump's trying to do the best he can. We got Republicans in office. What happens in 4, 5, 8, 10, 12 years when this bill starts to come arise, basically on right-wingers, or anybody that wants, and follow me real quick, anybody that wants to start not allowing their face to be shown in public due to facial recognition scanners? What happens when we start going around and we start realizing anytime we go somewhere, we automatically basically get accosted by something because of the facial recognition scanners? I told you guys I already get nailed by this when I used to go into Disney all the time. I never even made it up to the terminals in Disney before I would always be stopped by either private security contractors or law enforcement to basically be patted down and metal detected and just harassed, essentially is what it was. And the reason why is because Disney has some of the most advanced facial recognition software for any private community in the world. This, to me, seems like this is where this is going to go. I think they are going to start using this bill, because one part of the bill that really bothered me on this is, like I said, we already have laws talking about wearing a mask and committing violence as a crime. If you read it, when it talks about assault with a mask, but then it says, or if you oppress or intimidate someone. Well, this right here is kind of on the lines of what you see with the social justice warrior language of intimidating someone, because anyone can claim that you're being intimidating and you can get arrested. That's a fact right now. You can literally be in a conversation with somebody. You can run back and call the cops and say, this individual is intimidating me. They might not arrest him for it, but they may question him for it. Well, what happens now when you basically are in a conversation, you're trying to keep your face from being in a facial recognition software 10, 20 years down the road, and now all of a sudden you turn around and they say, well, he's got a mask on, he's intimidating me. Now they turn around and arrest you on this and say, well, we're charging you with a felony. You're basically going to go to prison for 15 years because you got in a conversation with a liberal who basically didn't like what you were saying and they intimidated you. Or what's the fact from somebody even saying that you covered your face while you were intimidating them and you didn't even cover your face, and all they have is your word against their word, and they still arrest you on it because of this charge? Antifa members are already committing multiple felonies when they go and do their acts. They are. That's already a fact. Like I said, when you show up in a black ski mask wearing a baseball bat with 16 penny nails drove through it, you are already in the commission of a crime at some point, because you are brandishing a deadly weapon while wearing a mask with intent to do great bodily harm when you're basically about to assault somebody. So you're already in that category where you pretty much need to go to jail. There's no question about it. So to come up with this whole new bill to start saying if you intimidate somebody or if you do anything covering your face or preventing your face from being seen while you're intimidating somebody, you need to go to jail, that's technically already a crime, guys. You can't really do that already. So to come out with this double bill, and as Dad just said, most of these cops on these incident situations, they were told to stand down. They were told, do not arrest Antifa members. The mayors, the governors, they already knew what was going on. They already knew, hey, listen, we got paid mercenaries coming in. They're called Antifa. They're going to be wearing black. They're going to be carrying weapons. Do not arrest them. Okay? Are you sure? Nope. Don't arrest them. Okay. That's fair enough. How are you supposed to enforce a law of somebody that's already committed a felony when you're told not to arrest them for breaking the law? It doesn't work like that. And as we see now more and more, guys, with the Chinese government starting to expand its facial recognition software technology to glasses now, the police all around China wear glasses that have full facial recognition software. They've already come out with a new one now from a firm called Megville that's announcing it's shifting its powerful face plus plus facial recognition technology beyond China into Thailand now. They've already made a secure deal with tech firm Vivo to make 3D models of people's heads within milliseconds of identifying them. Literally, so when you are walking around, the facial recognition software picks you up. They turn around, make a full 3D image of your face. Literally, this all happens within milliseconds. Picks you up and identifies you to the T, even when you're wearing disguises such as glasses, hats, mustache, certain things like that. The only way to really prevent these facial recognition softwares from fully identifying you is wearing a full face mask. That's it. And so this is something, the more I do research on this, the fact that they're coming out with this feel-good bill right now to try to make everybody go, oh, well, it's good, we'll stop Antifa. How are they possibly going to stop Antifa if the law enforcement is told to stand down when they're already breaking laws and committing multiple felonies? So the more I looked at this, Dad, the more this thing to me is a wolf in sheep's clothing bill that's going to be used against us in the very near future, the more the facial recognition software expands in the future.
Austin, that is an excellent analysis. You brought a lot of points to the table that I hadn't even thought about because I haven't done an in-depth review of this. I mean, think through this for a second with the Patriot Act. You know, I used to say, you know, when George W., the blithering president, said that, you know, he was going to put the Patriot Act together, you know, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. I warned people. I said, you don't understand what's going to happen. You're going to have people come in who aren't going to use this the way he's using it, and you're going to give them the right to pretty much arrest and detain and to torture American citizens. I said, this isn't cool. This isn't okay. This Patriot Act's not okay. And now we see all the other things that have spurred off from the Patriot Act and how the facial recognition system is part of that. You're absolutely right, Austin. Now, think through this for a second. Let's say, for instance, I want to go to Disney World, and I'm well known, and I don't want to be recognized. So I put on a fake mustache and a fake beard, or a pair of glasses, or a hat. And basically, in theory, I'm wearing a mask. Where do you draw the line on the mask? And now somebody says something to me, and they say, oh, by the way, aren't you Ted Brower? Yeah, and they say, well, I don't like your talk show, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, you didn't pound salt. Hey, you're intimidating me. You're wearing a mask. Yep. You don't know where this is going to go. How do we know it's not going to be put into a thing where, you know, you can't put windshield tint on your front windshield? You're here in Florida, people run like 70% tint, which is legal on the windshield. I think it's legal. I don't really know. But you guys just, you know, check with your local laws anywhere you go before you put tint on the windshield of your car. How do we know they're going to say that's not a form of a mask and you're trying to hide behind the mask and of the car windshield? You're right, Austin. This could go everywhere because as long as the police officers are being told to stand down and not to arrest Antifa members, and to let them go on their little merry way intimidating people, we don't need more laws. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous because Congress loves to make more laws, more bureaucracy, more court cases, more everything else. I mean, it's absolutely awful what's going on. It's absolutely horrible that they're continuing to do all of this stuff and reduce us basically to a loaf of bread, I guess you could say, and take our humanity away from us. By the way, half of the children who were separated at the border came with adults who were criminals or not even their parents. I thought I'd throw this one in. Almost half the children, 46 out of 103, who were 5 years of age, old or younger, and separated from adults at the U.S. border by law, couldn't be reunited with them because many of the adults were violent criminals, and some of the adults weren't even the children's parents. 11 of the adults have serious criminal histories, some of which include charges for child cruelty, kidnapping, murder, human smuggling, domestic violence, and narcotics-related crimes. A federal judge in San Diego has ordered the government to reunite all 103 children under five who were separated from the adults they came with at the border, in spite of the fact that many of the people they came through the border with are career child smuggling criminals. I mean, this is insane, Austin. See, this is what I talked about earlier. They used the children as a vehicle to get into the country, and they used the children basically to garner support from the agents that are there searching everybody. Oh, I'm just a daddy trying to get through with my baby. No, you're not. You've got high probability you're a child smuggler. And the government's own record says that 10,000 out of the 12,000 children were not even with their parents at the time of separation. It was somebody else. Also in Italy, migrants took Libya. You're gonna love this. This just happened in Italy. Migrants from Libya took the crew on the rescue ships that were rescuing them hostage and then threatened to kill them and to behead them. I mean, you can't even – this is insane. An oil supply ship rescued 67 migrants from Africa who were traveling in a wooden boat trying not to die at sea, seeking refuge in Europe. The illegal aliens became enraged and took the crew hostage when they discovered a Libyan Coast Guard boat arrived on the scene to take them back to Libya. Italian officials reported that the rescue turned into a piracy. The migrants were instead passed over to an Italian Coast Guard boat, which intervened after being alerted to the situation of serious danger for the security of the supply ship and its crew. The migrants' nationalities revealed that the bulk of them are hailing from safe countries. They're not at war. They just simply want to get into Germany and to Europe to get more free stuff. I mean, gosh, Austin, you know, it's so, you know, the craziest thing is, nobody else talks about all this stuff like we do. I mean, you guys want an hour of news that gives you all the current headlines that nobody else is talking about. Listen to our show. I mean, you got a guy on a wooden boat, probably in a little 16-foot dinghy. They're about to get overwhelmed by waves. They've been probably at sea for who knows how long. Probably no boat, no motor, no oars or whatever. They're about to sink. The guys pick them up, and they decide to turn into pirates and hijack the ship because they don't want to go back to Libya. Unbelievable, Austin. What do you think?
Honestly, it's hard to give like a real, true. What do you say about this? I mean, this is something that this is where it started to go now with these guys. I mean, and as you just said, and I've talked about this for years, is that they have shown now that at least about 60 to 70% of the migrants that have come into Europe are not coming from heavily war-torn countries. Some of them have war-torn areas in those countries, but you've got to remember, some of these countries out there in Northern Africa and the Middle East, they're large countries. We're not talking about, like, they're coming from these tiny countries that are, like, the size of South Florida. I mean, some of these countries are very, very large over there. So, yes, they may have some fighting at some point, which, I mean, honestly, what place in the world doesn't have fighting at some point? A lot of these guys now have just found that it's a meal ticket. It's a full-blown meal ticket, and it's easier now to figure out how to get across the water to get to your meal ticket. So I guess they have now found if you hijack these boats, if you get on there, that you could try to basically be like the Somalian pirates and hijack these boats to take you in. I don't know. I mean, it's a loss for words, but they created it over in Europe. When Merkel said, basically, open up the doors, open up the floodgates, let these guys come in, she literally signed her death warrant for the country, essentially, because now you have all these people that say, well, he got to go over, why can't I go over? She got to go over, why can't I come over? If they all get to go, I want to go. Why don't I get to go? That's exactly what's going on. Also, too, in other news, this is pretty wild now. Johnson & Johnson has been ordered to pay $4.7 billion in the ovarian cancer suit. The verdict was reached by a St. Louis jury last night after 8 hours of deliberation. Basically, the Johnson & Johnson is paying $4.7 billion to 22 women who claim the company's baby powder caused ovarian cancer because of the talc. The women claim the cancer was caused by exposure also to asbestos allegedly found in the baby powder as well. That is a huge payout. This is the largest ever verdict against Johnson & Johnson, almost a $5 billion payout, Dad. That's pretty crazy, but, I mean, quite frankly, these guys know what this stuff does to the body. They've seen the research on it, and the fact that these, they're claiming, and they tested them, had asbestos in the baby powder on top of everything else, I mean, that's some sloppy quality control right there, bud.
You know, Austin, I've told people for years, I mean, for 40 years, that talc causes ovarian cancer. I mean, since I was like, you know, my 20s, that talc is the Johnson & Johnson's baby powder should never be used by anybody because of the talc and how toxic the talc is and how it causes ovarian cancer. I said, no, girls, and a lot of girls did this. They would use Johnson & Johnson baby powder instead of washing their hair. They would actually, I saw a girl one time, her name was Teresa Grant, one of the first girls I dated. I was like 16, I think, and she was like 16, and we were going on a date, and, walked into her parents' house, and there she is dusting herself off from talc. I'm like, what the heck? And she goes, well, I didn't have time to wash my hair, and, you know, I want to make the hair look good for, you know, for the date, so I'm just, you know, doing the talc in my hair. And I asked your mom, Sharon, I said, did you ever put talc in your hair? She goes, yeah, all the time. Everybody did. Because it dries up the oil, makes the hair look good, and gives us some body, I guess, but now it also has been shown to cause ovarian cancer, which I've been telling people back since the 80s. And so now Johnson & Johnson is getting its due course as far as this. And it's sad because there are a lot of, there's 20 women or so, you said, on this lawsuit. But there's hundreds of thousands of women that have come down with ovarian cancer due to this. I mean, you know, and these 20 basically did this class action lawsuit against them. And quite frankly, I don't think they'll get the billions. I think it'll be again, it'll be appealed again and again. It'll go on for another 10 years. And then eventually they'll just say, okay, look, here's the deal. We're going to give you, you know, $10 million a piece. Go away. Leave us alone. Or something like that. They're going to do something. This is what they do. Guys, remember, Johnson & Johnson, you know, Walmart, GM, Ford, they don't have one attorney. They don't have to go out and hire a law firm when something happens with one of their products. They don't have to do that. They have attorneys who work for them on full retainer in law firms, and they have their own in-house attorneys to handle stuff and smaller stuff and research. You know, Ford and a lot of the big manufacturers, they knew that their trucks, their Vegas weren't safe or their Pintos weren't safe. They knew that they had to have certain seatbelt requirements they didn't have or airbag requirements they didn't have. They didn't do them because it cost extra money per unit of vehicle they were producing. And they knew that even if they allowed these inferior products that would cause death to be used, that the lawsuits that they would pay out would be less than going in and doing a recall on these vehicles. In other words, if it costs $4 or $5 billion for a recall for a faulty seatbelt mechanism, you know, in payouts, you know, or I'm sorry, in repairs of the vehicles with the recalls, and they were only paying out a couple hundred thousand or a couple million dollars with lawsuits, they just do the lawsuits. They don't care. You think, well, did they really do that? They actually do that. It's the bean counters. They do a cost-benefit analysis of how much money it's going to cost to do all the repairs right, or what it's going to cost. Because remember, all of these products from General Motors, now they're not as bad as they used to be, but they used to be ridiculous. They were designed with what was called planned obsolescence. Give you guys a little bit of history lesson here. What that means is, like, the transmission was designed to fail at 37,000 miles after the 36,000 mile warranty wore off. I mean, it was designed to just completely blow up. Ford was really bad about that with their 7.3 engines back in the 90s. You know, I had a friend of mine one time. He bought one of my Fords, and I had low miles on it. I had like less than 10,000 miles on it. I traded it to him. I said, look, you know, you need to be careful with your mileage. If you're going to keep the truck for a long period of time, it's got a 7.3 power stroke in it. I said, go ahead and keep it, but if you get over 36,000 miles, put an extended warranty on it. Oh, no, no, it's got a 100,000-mile drivetrain. I said, no, it doesn't. It's got a 36,000-mile drivetrain warranty on it. And sure enough, at 37, 38,000 miles, he scattered the transmission. It was $4,000 or $5,000 to get it fixed. This is called planned obsolescence, and they do that. They know that these vehicles only have a certain life expectancy, and they want you to be taking them to the dealer to support the dealer repair network. In other words, they want you to go to the dealer to get the stuff fixed all the time because it increases the profits for the dealers. It's all part of the big matrix they use. It's a shell game, guys. That's why when General Motors and Ford and Chrysler got caught basically doing this junk back in the 70s, Toyota and Honda came into the United States and did massive, massive market penetration almost immediately. They took large percentages of the market share that were dominated by the big three here almost within just a few years because they were building products that didn't blow up when you ran into them on the backside like the Pintos did. And General Motors, these guys had such bad publicity from what they were doing along with Ford and Chrysler that they got caught figuratively, I guess metaphorically, with their pants down. And they ended up, oh my gosh, because we're building junk now, people know we're building junk, and these doggone Japanese, they don't understand you're not supposed to build junk, and they're building really good high-quality products. Then, of course, Germany got on the bandwagon. The Germany products are just so stinking expensive to work on. It's ridiculous. You don't ever want those cars out of warranty. So that's why I said Hondas are such a good car. And I don't have a Honda dealership. I told you guys that the other day. I just like Hondas because they're a great entry-level car. You get a good car for about $20,000, a new Honda Accord, and you end up in a situation where you've got a car that's going to run for 300,000-400,000 miles if you do the service on it and not really have any problems with anything in most cases. And see, this is what they do. They have planned obsolescence. They count the cost. Johnson & Johnson knew talc was bad. They knew it was way back when. I knew it was bad way back when, but they kept producing it, kept putting it in products. And now they're having to pay the piper. But what they'll do, again, they'll keep it in litigation because they've got all these attorneys in-house. They cost the same whether they use them or not. If you've got a $10 million budget for your attorneys every single year, it's just $10 million every single year, whether you have them in court or whether they're sitting around playing tiddlywinks on their computers. They're the same. It's cost the same. So if they can push it out, push it out, push it out, push it out until the law firms that are involved in this finally say, gosh, this is enough, just settle with us. That's what they'll do, Austin, as far as I'm concerned. Let's see if they really pay out billions and billions of dollars. I don't think it'll ever happen. What do you think?
I'm questioning that too. They're probably going to, exactly like you said, they're going to try to stretch it out. Because, I mean, I just did the math on it for 20 women or 25 women or whatever it was. I mean, that's going to be two, without attorney fees, obviously, that'd be like $220 million per person, which is, I mean, it's a significant amount of money. As you said, a lot more women have been affected by that, but these are the main women that have actually been able to win the lawsuit. And so what they'll do is, that's exactly right. They'll stretch it out. Finally, they'll say, listen, we can either keep this in litigation for another 2, 3, 4 years. We'll keep stalling. We'll keep doing everything we can. We'll keep making as many excuses that we can legally do because we have nothing else to do right now. We're getting paid regardless, or basically give you guys, you know, $20 million a piece, and you guys basically go on your way. So they'll settle out, you know, for $400-450 million and call it a day. But as far as them paying out $5 billion, I highly doubt they're going to see that. But I don't know. I could be wrong. If it does, though, I don't know Johnson & Johnson that got that kind of just straight cash sitting around that's not going to massively interfere with as far as stocks and everything else. I don't know, Deb.
I don't know either, but we'll find out. By the way, in the UK now, Donald Trump was over there basically telling them all that they're doing the exit strategy wrong. And he dropped the bomb on May, the lady who's doing it wrong. And in fact, Nigel Farage gives an update on the Trump bopping, drum bopping on the watered down Brexit plan. I'll read it to you now. Nigel Farage, former head of the pro-Brexit UK Independent Party, says that Trump dropped a bombshell by criticizing UK Prime Minister Theresa May's soft Brexit plan, stating this was not the Brexit the people voted for, which it is not. This is all the globalists want. They don't want them out of the EU. Theresa May's plan would make the UK subject, listen to this, to European court. Where's Brexit? Lack of control over their own borders. Where's Brexit? Would make trade deals between the UK and the US virtually impossible. Where's Brexit? May faces actually being removed from court because of what she's done. This is an absolute disaster for the UK and for the people there. And again, the UK politicians, along with the royalty, the monarchy there, that kind of runs things from their little weirdness they do. And I'm not going to even go into detail with the weirdness these guys are involved in, including the death of Princess Diana. I won't even go there today. But the reality is this. Well, I'll say it. Princess Diana, when she died, she died on a formal druid holy site where they conducted human sacrifices. Google it. There you go. How weird is that? I mean, I'm talking weirdos over there. And quite frankly, the whole thing is they don't want to leave. They kept the pound because they didn't want to do all of that. But they want that full integrated economy with Europe, not because they love Europe, but because they don't love the people of London and Britain, and they wanted to continue to destroy them culturally, Austin. That's why they want to allow their borders to stay open to allow this massive, massive amount of people coming in from Africa, in the Middle East, to freely move into Britain and completely continue to destroy their system until they can bring in their new world order. That's what this is all about. And I applaud Trump for this. Well done, Trump. A whole lot better than your Kavanaugh pick. What do you think, bud?
No, you're absolutely right. Well, also, too, now on the west coast of the United States, as we see the blowback from this gun restriction, gun registration order that went into place July 1st, where I told you guys about that one individual ended up getting arrested, having a search warrant, his house ripped through, because he basically tried to register a firearm, and they deemed to have it an accessory on the gun, like an extra collapsible stock, not extra one, a collapsible stock that they deemed to be illegal, or something stupid on it, and they said it was restricted gun still in California, so they arrested him, charged him felonies. Well, now the state of California is being sued for refusing to provide an actual way for gun owners burdened by the new registration requirement to comply with the law, ultimately forcing them to face becoming criminals because they could not do what the law requires. The law was filed by the Second Amendment Foundation, which named California's Department of Justice and the Attorney General Xavier as defendants in its request for an injunction against the agency for failing and refusing to establish a properly functioning internet-based firearm registration system. Joining SAF in the legal action are CalGuns Foundation as well, Firearms Policy Coalition, Firearms Policy Foundation, and three private citizens. They said, we're suing because California's DOJ's fire application reporting system broke down the entire deadline week for people to register their firearms in accordance with the law. For an entire week, the system was completely inaccessible. People who wanted to comply with the law simply couldn't, and now they are facing becoming criminals because they couldn't do what the law requires. The organization explained that the state's required process during the week of the 25th through the 30th of June, which was the registration deadline week, did not work at all. And everybody that tried to register their firearms apparently got lost in the database and never processed. They said it was inaccessible and inoperable on a variety of different browsers across the state. Many users who were able to initially log in and started the process could not actually finalize the process because the system would crash and start back over again. They said it was like a bad version of Catch-22. The government required registration by the deadline for firearms, but the online registration failed and people couldn't register. They're required to obey the law, but then the system broke down, making it impossible to obey the law. This is the abysmal failure that we now call the state of California. They put so many laws on the books. They put so many restrictions in the air. They put so many caveats on everything you do that they literally make it impossible for somebody to live without being some type of criminal. And this is what they've done now. This is what they continue to do. And they have done this for years. And the sad part about this is that when you have a out of control tyrannical state like California now, and they go and they pull stunts like this, you allow them to turn into just this tyrant. And so they've gotten so big for their britches now that there's nothing nobody can follow the laws. You can't even figure out what anybody's doing now. And so there's no way to rule innocent men. You guys understand that. The only power any government has is the power to crack down on criminals. Well, when there aren't enough criminals, one makes them. One declares so many things to be a crime that it becomes impossible for men to live without breaking the laws. That is an old quote from Ayn Rand that I always found very significant because it's so accurate, as we've seen not only California, but our entire government structure begin to do this, simply things like the Obamacare Act with the individual mandate, and now this thing in California that's blown my mind now, where now these individuals are criminals for possessing basic firearms that are legal under their Second Amendment rights, but because they couldn't register them during the deadline of the California deadline on the registration, they're now basically considered criminals. Unreal, Dad, over there in that state of California.
Well, it's communism is what it is. I mean, we saw it under Lenin. We saw it under Trotsky. We saw it under Stalin. We saw it for Russia, basically, you know, the leadership over there killed their farmers because they didn't want to share equally. And then they all starved because they had millions starved to death because no one knew how to grow crops. I mean, they're a bunch of idiots. When the communists get into power, it doesn't make any difference who they are. They're idiots. And that's how they always act. We see this stuff. They completely become consumed with their power and their ability to dominate. And I love that quote by Ayn Rand, by the way, Austin. You cannot rule innocent men. I mean, that's an incredible quote, by the way. We need to put that on the wall. And that's why you have to pass laws to make them no longer innocent so you can control them. And it's sad because that's what we're seeing now all over the place, including with that little thing we talked about earlier, wanting to pass the Antifa laws that are already on the books to make everybody a criminal if they're wearing a fake mustache or whatever. It's ridiculous.
Yep.
By the way, Israel doesn't seem to want to leave Gaza alone. They're spraying crops now at really high altitudes with Roundup to kill stuff off, and they're getting crop drift or spray Roundup spray. That's, you know, if you spray something at 5,000 feet with Roundup and you have the wind blowing, you know, towards Gaza, there's just high probability it's going to go to Gaza. And I don't know what the altitude was they're spraying. I'm just saying that. But Israel has been spraying Palestinian crops in Gaza with Roundup and other herbicides to damage the vegetation apparently since 2014. Officially, the crop dusting is only done on the Israeli side of the border fence. But Palestinian farmers and the Red Cross testified, that damage can be seen deep inside Palestine. Glyphosate is the main herbicide that is used, and it can stay in the soil for months or even years. That's an absolute fact, and may have negative health consequences for the people who consume contaminated crops and or inhale the herbicide. Israel claims that clearing the brush near the border is necessary for security purposes. Okay. You know, here's the thing, guys, with all of this stuff. And you know, this is why we had that letter that we read the other day from one of our customers who was talking about how you couldn't have organic crops next to GMO crops because of drift of pollen and glyphosate and sprays, because you contaminate the organic crops. Whenever a country is allowed to do this kind of stuff and spray things like this, it's very frustrating to everybody in the area because you are the one who's having to breathe it. Years ago, we had the Mediterranean fruit fly infestation back in the 90s here in Florida, and I've told the story before on the show, but I'm going to tell it right quick. And they decided, I think it was Jeb Bush was the governor back then, in his infinite wisdom, I'm being very sarcastic, he decides he was going to spray Central Florida with malathion. This is a neurochemical. This is a neurotoxin for humans. And so I'm standing outside, and they told me they were going to spray that day. Sure enough, here comes some DC-3s, big old tanker planes. And they're flying. I mean, they're flying at 200 feet above the ground. I mean, over the housetops. And they're dumping malathion on every living thing, including the humans, including the animals, including the waterways, including the fish. I mean, everything got a douse. And they were warning pregnant women to stay inside while they were being doused with neurotoxins. I saw it with my own eyes. I was shocked. And then finally, we had some people, consumer groups, actually file a lawsuit with a federal court judge in Tallahassee to stop this insanity. But this is the kind of stuff that Austin talked about a minute ago. When governments get all absolute power, they get absolutely nuts with what they decide to do, and they don't think about any consequences. Can you imagine the beating, the prison term, the unbelievable evisceration that we would get in the press if we started flying a little Cessna around our neighborhood, dumping malathion on people's houses? You would go to prison for the rest of your life. You wouldn't even be asked a question. They would arrest you when you landed, and you would be charged with like 10 billion felonies, and you would not be allowed to bail or anything else. But because the government said we're going to poison everybody with malathion, it's okay. I mean, ridiculous, Austin. I mean, I can't even, you know, I talk about this stuff, and you think we're making it up. It's ridiculous, son. What do you think?
No, it really is. And also other two, I saw this out in California as well now. I guess it's a side effect from these chemtrails burning, I guess, after all the stuff they spray on them. They said the California fires are causing bizarre outbreaks of rash, bumps, and severe allergic reactions in residents. They said several fires broke out in the Rancho Cordova area. And these are not people that were burned. These are not even people that were very close to fires. These are people that have basically been in the general vicinity of areas that have had smoke and stuff like that. But many, many locals now are breaking out with mysterious rashes, all the way from allergic rashes to giant bumps to itching to swelling tongues. Locals are scrambling to find the source of the allergic reactions and figure out what is going on. And they said so many people are suddenly having unexplained allergic reactions out of nowhere, and nobody can figure out what it is. More fun in California, and there's no question about it. I mean, who knows what's been burning out there? Who knows what was sprayed out there? Who knows if they tried some little test weapon out there that ended up blowing up and starting a fire? There's no telling. There's absolutely no telling at all, especially out west, because of how much testing they've done, including the stuff with Fukushima and everything else. But to me personally, if you're living out in California, I definitely start looking in the near future on relocating with a different position or moving or doing something a little bit different, because that state is going downhill very, very fast. That's why they're having a mass exodus out of California. I saw this article earlier today just on top of this, right at the end of it. It said, according to research, California has lost thousands of extremely high-income individuals, basically earners that make over $1 million a year plus, because of the Proposition 30 income tax increase. They said they raised the income tax in 2016 basically to the 13.3% income tax being the top bracket. Remember, that's state income tax. So you have federal income tax, which goes up to, what, 36, 39 now. Then you have state income tax, which is 13.3. Then you have sales tax on top of that for buying something in the state of California. California has the highest state income tax out of any country whatsoever, and they've talked about now, with the increase that is set to expire in 2019, they're originally going in now and saying that it's been extended to 2030, and there's already effort to extend those income tax hikes yet again prior to its expiration in 2030 now. So this is what happens when you deal with a defunct state. And by that, I mean a state that literally has no ability to fund itself. It has to continually tax the population higher and higher and higher and higher. Why, do you ask? Well, that's a great question. They have to be able to give free money to all the illegals that are continually pumping into the country, as it's now designated a sanctuary state now. They cannot continue to give people tens of billions of dollars in housing and food and transportation and roadway upkeep and all these different things they're continuing to do. They can't do it on the money that they already have and the money that they get loaned from the federal government every year. They can't do it. And the aid and the grants and all the stuff. It's still not enough. Now they have to continue to tax people with a state income tax, and I'm sure I can guarantee you, by 2030, it's not going to be 13.3%. It's probably going to be upwards of 20 to 25%. So by the time you actually factor in your top income tax bracket federally, 39%, your Social Security, your Medicaid, which pushes you up almost to 40, these guys are probably going to have you at 25%. You're probably going to be looking at anywhere around 70 to 80% of your income tax, if you live in California, is immediately going to go to all these different entities like IRS. So if you make $1 million 1 year, you know, you do real good, you make $1 million gross, you're going to bring home $200,000 at best. That's where it's heading in California, and that's where they have to take it, because they cannot fund all this stuff without stealing money from the people that actually work on a regular basis, Deb.
This is what they've already done in France. In some cases, they have 100% income tax in France. 100%. People are bailing out of France because they can't do it. See, the graduated income tax is the plank of the communist doctrine. It's a plank. It's, you have to have a graduated income tax because you can't allow people to be successful and do their own thing and not punish them for it, because you've got to take their stuff away from them and basically make everybody equal, because it's socialism. And that's what California has turned into. By the way, talk about California again. An Ottawa professor is now blasting the U.S. military for owning the weather for military use through geoengineering. The facts by Dr. Michael Chowosky, who is the University of Iowa's emeritus professor of economics, has worked directly with governments in various geopolitical issues, has spoken out against weather modification and the long history of its use. Reflect on why are we spraying things into our atmosphere without people being aware of it? Why is such a secretive issue? Why should we care about this? Guys, we bring Dane Whittington back on for 15 minutes next week because he had an excellent article he sent to me today, even before our show. So I'm going to have him give a 15-minute update on what we need to know. Because remember, guys, they're doing this 5G stuff around us. They're blowing us up with chemtrails down here in Florida with geoengineering. They're doing all of this stuff to us while they're playing the Donald Trump reality president's TV show. Yeah. It's like we're all hooked on a soap opera watching this clown get up there and ask about, did he look his wife in her eyes while he was having an affair with somebody else? What does that have to do with Trump? I mean, of course, again, it's to discredit the witness. I got that. But, guys, it's just ridiculous, this reality show we have going on with Trump now. Guys, I love you. Have a wonderful weekend. I appreciate you guys so much. Had the opportunity to get to pray for you today. And I tell you that every day because I want you to know I pray for you every day. That's why I say that, because you guys are the best. You guys are part of our family. I appreciate you. I'll also go ahead and finish it up, and I'll do the write-up, guys. I love you guys. Talk to you on Monday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, guys, it is it's a wild world we live in, and you have to do the best to try to sift through all the nonsense and garbage that were constantly being pushed out, like I said earlier, with that horrible tragedy, that child dying from meningitis, and then turning around and using it to spin, like that's the spin factory, to tell everybody, oh, well, the child died because he got exposed to meningitis and he didn't have his vaccination in time. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, it says on the insert, on the vaccine, that meningitis can be an adverse reaction from that vaccine, and he just happened to get it a day after he got the vaccination. Give me a break, man. This is a crazy world we're living in, and the lies are nonstop. That's why you got to be so vigilant to be awake and aware of what's going on. And that's why we try to do what we do with this show, to spread the truth and spread the word. So we appreciate the support, guys. Thank you for forwarding our shows. If you need anything, healthmasters.com. As I told you yesterday, the probiotic $350 billion is on sale for product of the week right now. So be sure to check that out. Also, a couple of the other ones on there to be voted on. So if you guys find one that you want to vote on next week that's going to win, hammer it down and vote for it this weekend so it'll win for you. The Testo Plus, the Attention Factor, which is a really great product. I love that. And the Eyesight are all available, including multiple other ones to check out on the website to vote for. So be sure to check those out. You guys have an absolutely safe, blessed, awesome weekend. Make sure you're drinking a lot of water. Stay hydrated. It's very hot all across the state right now. So enjoy yourselves. We love you. We appreciate you. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night, and we'll talk to you again Monday as always.